I got limp.
Go ahead, Jesse. Do
you need that ball? You got
go to school. Keep your grades up. Go to college. That's what we tell kids over and over. What if just leaving your apartment and walking up the block is risky? What if it feels safer to stay home, play video games, keep a low profile? And when you do go out, head somewhere safe, like the teen center or the basketball court. That was the world of African-American teenager Jesse Jean. You are hearing voices from NPR, the best of public radio. I'm Katie Davis. Jesse lived a half block from me in our Washington, D.C. neighborhood. He was lucky enough, though, to get a scholarship to a private boarding school and brave enough to take it. I kept in touch with Jesse as he moved into this new world. In the next hour, we'll hear three stories covering 7 years. We start in summer 2001. As a late August day dwindles, three teenagers lean their bodies against a utility box at 17th and Euclid Streets. They are there every night, and most days for that matter, waiting for cars that slow down. When one does, one of the teenagers gets in and takes a ride around the block. $10 is handed over, a packet of marijuana or cocaine handed back.
Ugly day.
But think about that, Sally.
Hurry up.
Just a few steps away, on the asphalt playground behind H.D. Cook Elementary School, a dozen boys and girls are waiting for their cousin, Jesse Jean, to show up for his going-away party. They scramble onto the battered monkey bars, and right where the kids flip and hang, 9 letters are sprayed onto a wood post.
Rest in peace, Tay. And rest in peace, bye. Rest in peace, Tay.
It say Tay right here.
And it say bye right there. You don't know Tay?
I'm the little bad wizard.
Tell me. Watch out.
This boy used to be from around here. Well, he died. Somebody stabbed him.
This boy who used to be from around here, that's a phrase heard all the time at 17th and Euclid Streets. A phrase that usually finishes this way. That boy's dead now, in prison now, on the corner now. Jesse was friends with both Tay and Bai. Two friends and two funerals.
At times it could be scary. You can never know what's going to happen. It's like my house is in the middle of everything, so. Because I grew up there, so it's like I don't know anything else, but I know it's a bad neighborhood. I've seen a lot of things, and I don't want to end up like that.
How do you want to end up?
Well, I mean, I want to end up, I can't say that like off the top of my head. I know for sure I don't want to end up like that. I know that for sure.
So when there is a good leaving, a family stays up late, chopping onions for macaroni salad and baking mountains of drumsticks and wings, heaping it onto everyone's plate.
You gonna throw that chicken away? You know I stayed up all night with that chicken. And you gonna throw that chicken away?
Nancy planned this party for her cousin Jesse.
You see, a young black boy like that, it just makes you feel really great. He had a lot of other options, but he chose the right option. He just kept going. And it's like he raised himself. I mean, if you save one like that, that's like saving 1,000.
At first, it seemed like no one was going to make a fuss over Jesse's scholarship to the elite boarding school. Jesse's grandmother, a cafeteria worker who raised him, is very sick and in the hospital. And Jesse's mother and father both died violently when he was only 2. So the party fell to Nancy, who watched Jesse grow up next door, and now tells him, after boarding school, don't come back here. You go straight to college.
I feel that 60% of the kids today, especially in this neighborhood, they got to get away. Or they'll get swallowed. Hi, sweetheart. Or they will swallow these babies up.
Jesse bypassed that trouble. He found Boy Scouts, basketball, and then the Good Shepherd Teen Learning Center. That's where he met his tutoring team, 2 women who worked at the White House Office of Management and Budget. They helped Jesse with his homework and taught him how to shake hands and look someone straight in the eye. After tutoring was over, though, Jesse's world contracted, back to his corner, where he kept his eyes to himself. As hard as Jesse tried, the chaos spilled into his life, his future. His grandmother's basement apartment was a hub of drinking and drug use. If he overslept, no one got him up for school. Other days, his grandmother spent his bus fare on lotto tickets. He missed 70% of his 10th grade year. Yet his tutors, Tony Husted and Terry Ellison, persisted. Both women have demanding jobs and families with children. Still, says Tony Husted, they made room for him.
Once you get to know Jesse, you really love him. He's such a loving kid, and it would have been real easy to dislike the people around him, but somebody did something right. This is a nice kid. It's a kid who has just got a great heart, and great hearts don't come naturally.
The more Tony Husted and Terry Ellison got to know Jesse, the more they worried about his home life.
I just became more and more distressed over the fact that, you know, Jesse's living in this environment that where no one works, no one gets up. You call there, they may know he's there, they may not.
It became clear to us that no kid could live and exist and study and succeed in that kind of environment. And we found ourselves doubting whether he could even pass high school or even live through high school.
That's when the idea of boarding school surfaced. Get Jesse away from his neighborhood, his house. The D.C. public school that Jesse was enrolled in had a sister school in Connecticut, Hyde Boarding School. With all his absences, though, Jesse was failing 10th grade. It seemed impossible that a private school would admit him, much less offer a scholarship to help with the $28,000 tuition. That's exactly, though, what Hyde School did. His tutors vowed to raise the rest. Jesse said, "I won't go." His tutors begged. No was Jesse's answer. No, no, no. After weeks of this, weeks, he finally said, "Okay, I'll try it."
Just by going, you're providing a huge opportunity to a lot of other these boys all around here. You don't realize it, but you're opening huge doors for them. And so just take that seriously.
So that's where we find 17-year-old Jesse Jean this late August day, 2001, dreading this new boarding school and sick of the corner he grew up on.
Well, I didn't really decide. I just looked at it as something like I needed to do because it wasn't, by me leaving here, I wasn't missing anything here. So I was like, I might as well have anything to lose.
Jesse slips away before many of his relatives arrive at the party. He'll spend this last night at Tony's, his tutor's house, where he still has to pack the school clothes she bought him, his first blazer, the button-down shirts, and the ties that the salesman taught him how to tie, his first ties ever.
He's gone. Why didn't Alifa and Sam either?
Well, Alifa.
She just pulled up.
Well, and your grandmother didn't see him, and your other aunt didn't see him. They just put all the money in the car.
Drive 10 hours north to rural Connecticut. Slow down on the last stretch, on Route 169. Wild turkeys huddle by stone walls, walls wedged together just after the American Revolution. The world is wide here. Farms and old homes surrounded by acres and acres, cows and horses bowing over fields. The animals in Woodstock, Connecticut might crowd you, never the neighbors. In the middle of a clearing, Hyde School appears.
Thinking of you.
Hey, of course.
Girls and boys jostle through the double doors and hallways. No metal detectors, no security guards. Making their way to biology lab, algebra, and American history class.
The Boston Massacre, right? Was it really a massacre?
No.
Okay. It was kind of exaggerated to try.
It's November, and Jesse has been at boarding school for 2 months now. He's learned to use his Palm Pilot, which is required, and he now knows that a shotgun blast can be ignored, that it's just duck hunters. He must go to discovery meetings where students talk about problems such as drugs, nothing new, and bulimia, something Jesse's never heard of. 6 days a week he has classes. Every afternoon he has sports. And he loves that his team has real uniforms and real pads.
Rainbow 19! Rainbow 19!
Excellent, here we go.
Jesse is starting quarterback for junior varsity. And he calls the plays and leads the practices. His roommate is white. Most kids here are white. There are 243 students and 21 blacks on campus. Mostly, Jesse hates how every minute is structured. TV and video games restricted. He slogs through the days, resentful. I mean, he grumps, why shouldn't I be able to watch the NBA? In the middle of this swirl, Jesse hears from home. His grandmother is slipping into a coma. His tutors fly Jesse back to Washington and drive him straight to the hospital. He takes his grandmother a picture of himself in his Hyde football uniform, and she responds. The next day, Jesse's grandmother, his only guardian, dies.
To sit back and feel bad for him doesn't do any good. I'm not saying it cold-heartedly, but there's a lot of kids with sad stories that go to school here also.
Sit with Associate Dean Don McMillan, one of the people at Hyde who pushed for Jesse's admission and scholarship.
He needed an opportunity. If we didn't kind of push for this, what was going to happen to him? I thought his world could get pretty small. And he would lose, and I think the people around him would really lose, because I think the guy's really got something to him.
Okay, here we are.
Don McMillan leads the way to Jesse's third period English class,
this has been
a remedial class for writing and reading skills.
I just talked to the teacher and said, hey, what's going on? He said he was just getting into it with Jesse. So they're upstairs. If you want to take a listen, go ahead.
This is the last class before exams. Where are we going to go?
Five students face the dean of students as their teacher describes their disruptive behavior and singles Jesse out as the leader, not just on this day, but all fall.
And we're supposed to spend today going over our writing, getting ready for the exam. Where are we going from here? Jesse?
It's obvious that we need to have at least some class time or something. So
Jesse is slumped in a chair, his tie flipped over his shoulder, his chin buried in his chest.
I know I'll come during break because I don't have anything to do. But
when Jesse suggests making up the time during a rare free period, the other kids agree. A small window into Hyde's philosophy that kids should take responsibility for their own education. The students file back to class, Jesse leading the way, muttering about how the teacher is retarded. When asked to read, though, Jesse pulls out his handwritten essay.
The title of mine is Life Away from Home. Knock, knock, wake up. I'm finally awakened from a loving dream in which I'm free of being at this place. I open my eyes. It's 6 o'clock a.m.
Jesse is working harder than he's ever worked in his life. Here are what he calls the heroics of the day. Get up, do two chores, get into formal dress, which Jesse pulls off with flair. First class is at 8 a.m., followed by three more classes, then sports, dinner, and evening study until lights out at 10 p.m. Jesse is doing all that, and still the consensus among his teachers is that he's holding back. English teacher Tom Salter.
Jesse hasn't decided, you know, I'm really going to go after this. He hasn't decided, you know, I don't care if it's English, I don't care if it's football, I am a learner. I mean, he's doing what he needs to do to get by.
No one at Hyde is suggesting that Jesse won't be able to make it here. Not yet. They say the first year is often teaching kids how to learn, to discover their abilities. They say that Jesse has the natural gifts of a leader, that he can set the mood in every class. All this leadership stuff, all these people out to improve him, it just makes Jesse groan.
People like that get under my skin. And I don't know why, but it's just people like that cause me to react a certain way.
People like what? Like what got under your skin?
It's like making it seem like I'm the golden child of the class, or I want it both ways. Like I want to joke around and then I always want to be serious. And I'm like, that's not me at all.
Do you feel like you're changing?
Well, I know I'm changing. It's like right here doing this interview, I mean, I know I'm, like, well-spoken for and everything like that. I know I'm changing. It's just it's crazy at times. It's like they're changing you. It may not be the way that you want to change, but you're changing. It's like they give you, like, this big old plate, and they just keep on overloading it.
By the end of the first grading semester, Jesse has failed history and has D's in his four other classes. Hyde School puts him on watch study hall. Back home, Tony, Jesse's tutor, is worried an opportunity might be slipping away.
He can't flunk this year. I mean, for his own good, how long is he going to stay in high school? I mean, he'll be 18 and going into the 11th grade, 19 going into the 12th grade. Will he go into the 12th grade at the age of 20? I mean, we're really worried about all of this.
Tony is also anxious about where Jesse is going to live during vacations, now that his grandmother is gone. He could move in with his aunt, but she has 10 children and lives on that corner. Tony and her husband have urged Jesse to live with them in Old Town Alexandria, Virginia, just across the Potomac River, in a neighborhood with old cobblestones, on a street that's serene, in a townhouse with a room waiting for Jesse.
We said that if he likes the setup, then we'll get him a desk and take these down and put his own pictures on the wall and get rid of some of this stuff.
Tony has hired a lawyer and petitioned the District of Columbia to become Jesse's legal guardian. When she told Jesse that, he was silent, but did not say no. No one in Jesse's family filed custody papers. Still, when winter break arrives in mid-December, Tony finds herself picking Jesse up at the airport, unsure. Will he choose to go to his aunt's house or hers? In the car, Jesse asks, "So, where are we going?" "How about my house?" Tony suggests. And after a silence, Jesse agrees. No discussion, just an okay. A big decision made quietly, which is Jesse's way.
Oh, man.
I ain't gonna kick off.
Man, can you stop the ball? Yes or no? God, you gonna keep calling time on and stuff. Can we play the game?
A few days before Christmas, Jesse invites an old friend, Jeremiah, to spend the night at his new home in Old Town Alexandria. The next morning, they're sunk down in brown leather chairs, quilts over their legs, playing video football. While Jesse is clearly comfortable here, he says he finds himself coming and going a lot, heading into his old neighborhood for a haircut and to play ball, then back to Tony's for a home-cooked dinner.
When I'm here, I want to go there so I can see everyone and everything. Like, when I'm over there, I want to come back here so I can, like, you know, it's like back and mixed feelings back and forth.
What are some of the mixed feelings?
Like, Tony and her husband, they don't talk like I talk, so I'll have to, like, adjust my speaking to, like, proper. But, I still act the same, though. They still don't talk like how we talk around 17th Street. But, yeah, besides that minor adjustment, I don't know.
When you're here in Alexandria and you're in this house, do you ever feel like, I just need to be around some black people?
No, not at all, because it's like, I mean, If I ever happen to feel like that, I mean, I could tell them I want to go and they'll let me go. I mean, it's not like I'm in prison or anything. But I rarely feel like that at all.
It's April, and a light breeze ruffles the new green and tugs at everyone to stay outside. 1 p.m. is time for drama class, and students slouch into the dim theater to sit on the stage for warm-ups. Jesse hums and stretches his legs. He's grown an inch, probably two, as if it's finally safe to grow. A 6'3" sophomore. The spring play at Hyde is Little Shop of Horrors, and Jesse is playing Audrey II, the wilting, starved plant that comes to life when fed, a bit like Jesse Jean this year. Jesse has tried out so many things this year. He painted an arresting self-portrait in art class, half shadow, half light, his ambivalence swirling in acrylic. He was awarded a medal for most valuable player in JV basketball. And these days, he's actually excited about history, pressing for details about the Civil War and the Fugitive Slave Act. Jesse's complaining has been replaced by a gentle mocking of the school's formality. He calls other students Mr. and Miss, and in return, he is known as Mr. Jean. He's also becoming known as a student who will share some of his painful childhood, one-on-one, if it will help another student.
Yeah, well, like, being at this school, it's opened my eyes to a lot of things. Like, it forces you to mature. That's one of the things I actually like about this school. It forces you to take a look at yourself and then take a look at life. And it's people around here to help you understand, you know, the everyday struggles and everyday positive things of life. So I just found myself maturing a lot up here than I would in back in D.C. or whatnot, and I just found myself, you know, just relating to people and getting out to people, trying something new, basically, and, you know, going into it with an open mind.
So Jesse is known at Hyde, and that might be the biggest change this year. He has allowed himself to become known, not in all ways, but in some. He is no longer silent, slipping through the halls like a trespasser. In late April, Jesse is failing algebra, still cutting up in English, and behind on a history term paper. But Associate Dean Don McMillan says that's about where I expect him to be. Hyde will push him, and he'll keep pushing himself.
You know, the kid knows how to bounce back and just kind of stick with it. And I think being here has helped him because there is consistency. I mean, one thing I asked Jesse a while ago is school a little bit easier when you have to go to school every day. And he goes, yeah, I know what's going on a lot more. It's a little bit more interesting.
Teachers at Hyde can see a clear future for Jesse as a powerful leader, a solid student, and a star athlete. Jesse, though, still finds himself catching his breath from the distance he has sprinted, from sleeping away his school days to studying at a prep school where 98% of the students go on to college. Hyde School has already invited Jesse back for next year, and this time his decision came easily.
I was just like, I have to come back here next year. I was just like, I have to. Because if I stay at home, no matter if I don't do drugs or if I attend school, eventually, sooner or later, my life is going to take a downward spiral. So I was just like, it's not always where I want to be. You know, I'm not always happy to be here, but it's where I need to be. And I came to that realization, and I was like, I just need to come back. So here I am.
Jesse says the one thing he's always been able to do is to see things for what they are, to see the whole picture. And just lately, he's beginning to try out his ability to imagine how things might be. Imagine the many different ways his life might unfold. Coming up, Jesse Jean makes it to his senior year. That's in a minute on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Hearing Voices. I'm Katie Davis. We continue with Jesse's story, a story he's starting to share with others. And when he does, he always begins with those first months at Hyde Boarding School. Go back. Back to a Saturday afternoon in late August 2001. History teacher Heather Cavalli was outside the boys' dormitory at Hyde School in Woodstock, Connecticut. An airport taxi came up Route 169, past the cows, past the hay bales, and turned onto campus with Jesse Jean in the back seat.
He was all by himself and kind of pulled out his bags all by himself and had this big backpacking bag and this other bag, and I kind of came out and helped him bring him in and got him set up. And I just felt really bad that this is somebody showing up with no parents, and I kind of watched him kind of face this, oh my God, what am I doing here, kind of thing.
On that day, Heather Cavalli knew bits of Jesse's story, that his parents died when he was little, that his grandmother didn't pay much attention to him. She knew that his two mentors, Tony Husted and Terry Ellison, were desperate to get Jesse away from his home and the hopelessness there. Jesse said little that first year, just sat back and watched. He slipped through the halls, head down, the way Jesse did back home. Walk past the dealers, don't look. Curiosity brings trouble.
I speak to people, but I'm very much, like, secretive. Like, I stay by myself. Like, if people want to come and chill with me, they can come and chill with me. But, you know, I'm very much very so happy, like, by myself, you know, just chilling, like, shooting basketball or whatnot. Just, you know, focus on what I need to focus on, not focusing on, like, the whole school as a whole.
Yo, 19! Yo, 19! Hey!
The football field was the one place Jesse never held back. He was quickly chosen as JV quarterback and ran the drills with confidence. Teachers at Hyde started poking at him. You're a leader on the football team, Jesse. Be a leader in class. Eric Kelly was assistant dean then.
You know, if Jesse says, listen, guys, we're going to knock this off and we're going to do work, then I believe it'll happen. But if Jesse's going to make fun or, you know, joke and sort of take things less seriously, then that's how the class will run. He's not the only student like that at the school. We really try to find those, we call them spheres of influence, that kids will fall in one way or the other.
It bugged Jesse the way everyone kept at him. After all, he was going to school now and doing his homework. Maybe he joked somebody always wore a tie, never broke the rules. We see greatness in you, Jesse, but only hard work will bring it out. Hyde is known for its character education, and their method is the full court press. Every teacher, every coach, even the seniors come at a kid with the same messages. One teacher told Jesse, "You recognize the secret code of kids who've had it hard. It's your destiny to help them." Jesse was just trying to get through that first year. Sometime in the winter, Jesse began sending notes to Christina, a classmate, little comments and jokes. Christina says it started when Jesse learned that she'd spent much of her childhood in an orphanage in Russia.
Like, I never knew my parents, and, you know, I was an orphan for 7.5 years, so I felt abandoned. I guess he feels that same feeling, and, like, we just connected like that. I mean, different stories, different backgrounds, but similar feelings about our past. I mean, there was definitely no emotions, though, involved. It was kind of like, yeah, I relate to you, and we left it at that.
After some time, Jesse told Christina this story, a story he kept from almost everyone.
I lost my parents when I was 2 to violence. My dad killed himself, didn't kill my mom. You know, it's happened while me and all of my siblings were present in our house, and, you know, I didn't understand what was going on, so I was only 2 years old, so.
The words can get confused when Jesse tells the story today. Bits and pieces do come back. He was in the room with his parents' bodies after the shooting. No one came for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough, you know, growing up without parents. You know, but in my neighborhood, a lot of people didn't have parents, you know, so it was sort of like we were there for each other, you know, but yeah, that's how my life started out, man, and I didn't understand, you know. Sometimes I still have a hard time understanding, you know, but I think I'm getting better at understanding and really believing in something beyond myself.
Come forward now to January 3rd, 2004. It's winter break. Jesse's a senior, 5 months to graduation. He was voted most valuable player in both varsity football and basketball. He lives with his mentor, Tony, and her husband, Edwin, in Alexandria, Virginia, a move that happened after his grandmother died 2 years ago. His other mentor, Terry, comes over often for family meetings. This one is to choose where to apply to college.
Before you go back to school tomorrow, Jesse, we need to get the applications for all these, and we have applications for many of them. We have to fill them out as much as possible, and we have to include checks.
It's noon, and Jesse has folded his 6'5" frame into a kitchen chair. He pops a soda and looks around sleepily. Jesse's sense of humor wakes up a few hours after he does, something he wove into one of his college essays.
This is my college application, and it's titled My Sense of Humor and I. Given some of the violent actions that have personally happened to me, including witnessing the violent death of my parents, some people don't expect me to have a sense of humor. Life would have been a lot harder for me if I allowed my past to alter the person I've become.
Tony says that essay will work for every college you want to apply to, except for one. You'll have to write an extra essay. Jesse slouches and sighs. Writing comes hard for him, and this college stuff, it seems endless.
Which one have you liked?
Virginia Wesleyan and Catawba.
Those are the two schools you like the best?
Yeah.
And what made them stand out above the others?
I don't know. I mean, I just... It seems like the... Both of them seem like the kind of schools that, you know, weren't too big, weren't too small, and felt like I can, if I needed help, I can easily go out and seek that help.
It's surprising that Jesse's ideal college is a place where he'll be known, a place like Hyde. Terry says, whoever knew we'd get to this point?
I mean, you know, there was a time where we didn't think that we, you know, that he'd get out of high school. So now to be looking at actually probably some choices around colleges is just, it's fascinating, and it is what should have happened for him.
The final list has 13 colleges, and the work is divvied up. Terry will send out videotapes of Jesse passing 60 yards as varsity quarterback. Tony will complete the financial aid applications. And Jesse's job is to write an extra essay by tomorrow, his last day of break. The next morning when Jesse came down for breakfast, Tony asked, when are you going to write that extra essay?
And he looked at me with anger in his face, and he said, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it.
You know, and she's like, really? She's like shocked because, you know, I was like, I don't feel like doing an essay right now, so I'm not doing an essay. You know, because I was frustrated. I was tired. And she's just like, oh, really? So well, if you're not going to do an essay and I'm not going to help you, I was like, fine. I've had enough anyway. I'm tired.
And when I say not going to do it, I'm not filling out one of these applications. You can figure out how to get into these schools by yourself.
Tony went upstairs and called Terry. Jesse left and went to his old neighborhood. When he got home, Jesse apologized, and he wrote the essay. Tony and Terry say, we are no longer Jesse's friends. We are his parents. The tantrum over the essay, that's normal, and that's all we ever wanted for Jesse. There is a nagging worry. Will the colleges that Jesse wants to go to take a chance on him? Last fall, while visiting a campus, Jesse turned to Terry and said quietly, this would be easier if I had better SAT scores. Over the past 3 years, Jesse grew more and more frustrated academically. He was working hard, and his grade average stayed at B- to C+. There was always so much he didn't know, and Tony says it made him doubt himself.
At one point, I sat down and I said, do you realize why you have these handicaps in school? And he said, no. And I said, what we got from your grandmother and what we got from your school records was that you witnessed the murder, suicide of your parents, and you did not speak for several years to anyone but your sister. And because you did not speak for several years, when you started school, they put you in special ed for emotionally disturbed children. And then, you know, within a month or two, you started speaking, but they did not take you out of special ed, and you spent 8 years of school in special ed for that reason alone. And your records show, and your teachers, especially the ones we talked to, felt that you should not have been in special ed. Well, when I told Jesse that, his face, I almost can't describe his face. It was as if the biggest weight had been taken off and the biggest realization, shocking realization, had happened to him because he really had never heard the story before.
Jesse says, I just want to be on the same level as the rest of my generation. And he adds, I am getting there.
All right. Since Jefferson owned slaves and Locke...
It's mid-February at Hyde School.
Evaluate Jefferson and Locke's ideas about equality and liberty. Write your response, keep your pens moving with whatever comes to mind.
When senior ethics class began, teacher Mark Dewthorne says Jesse was insightful in discussions, but he totally bombed his first test.
I was afraid that he really would have a hard time passing the course because we do very difficult material. And he was in my office, and so I said to him, I gave him an analogy. I said, if you went to the gym one night after you'd finished your homework, and let's imagine there are three basketball courts and there are three teams practicing. There's Hyde's JV team, there's last year's championship team, the varsity, and then there are these guys from UConn who've come over here who they didn't make the UConn squad, but boy, they're really working hard, you know, trying to make it for next year, and they're scrimmaging on a third court. I said to Jesse, which court would you go to? And in a flash, he said, oh, I go to the UConn guys. And what I said is, in class, you know, I asked him, who do you sit with? And he looked me square in the eye and he said, I sit with the JV students. And that moment was the moment everything changed for him academically. He then deliberately would sit next to the best students, and then they would talk with him. And the dialogue itself has really helped Jesse blossom as a learner.
Jesse received the school award for most improved student.
Hey, that's my first academic award at Hyde, so that's good.
Besides studying, Jesse has several daily jobs. Seniors help run the school. 6:13 a.m., Jesse's up. At 6:15 a.m., he wakes up the students on his dorm wing. His room is pure order, bed corners tucked, shoes lined up. This makes him a tough dorm inspector, which he does at 7:15 a.m. By then, Jesse is in a white shirt, bleached and ironed, and a silk tie.
Ross, why isn't your bed made, man?
Ross tries a you-know-how-it-is smile.
Why isn't your bed made?
Being in charge of the boys' dorm suits Jesse. Certain people need more help with cleaning, he explains. Several teachers say Jesse's almost part of the faculty.
If you're a brand new student, I want you to follow Jesse.
Go to Saturday morning performing arts class, and Jesse is told, this is Scott, he's new. Stand next to him and make sure he sings. Jesse stops teasing his girlfriend, the daughter of a former Hyde headmaster, and goes over to the new kid. He leans into him. Follow my lead. I'll show you how we do the banana song. Jesse goes all out, waving his arms, stepping in a circle. The new kid starts laughing and singing. Go, bananas. Go, go, bananas.
You seem so much more relaxed to me. The last time I was here, there was a kind of an undercurrent of frustration and feeling like your plate was too full and you were it was making you sort of angry.
Yeah, that's definitely true, you know, but once you've been here for a while and you learn the ropes, I mean, you know, things, you work with the faculty, so things are a little bit more relaxed than sort of like paying your dues, you know. When I got here, I wasn't happy to be here. That was obvious, you know. And, you know, after a while, after I've been here, you know, you kind of like figure things out. It's not that bad. Not that bad.
What would you say was the most surprising thing or important thing that you learned about yourself here?
What's the important thing I've learned about myself? You know, I have a lot to offer to the other people. That's been huge. Just understanding that, you know, I have something unique that I can spread onto other people has been very, very helpful. And I've also learned to accept, you know, help and other things from other people.
Every time Jesse comes home, he visits 17th and Euclid Streets, where he grew up. He sits on the steps of his old apartment, and his little cousins climb on him, and his older ones fuss over him. He plays ball down at the playground court, and he always stops by the teen center, where he first met his mentors. About a year ago, Jesse popped into the center. Nigel Akunabi was leading a rap session, and he says Jesse took it over, telling his friends there are no handouts, that only hard work would change their lives.
Because a lot of guys use excuses, whether it's, I'm a young black man and it's hard. And Jesse just came with this incredible story about, you know, just out of the blue, you know, my mom and my dad is gone, you know, like tragically murdered, you know. And I'm still here, you know. When I come back to the neighborhood, I feel like I haven't missed anything. You know, it's kind of, as soon as he says it, it's like looking you in the eye, man. It's almost like a big brother or maybe even a father figure for some of his friends, you know, because he's obviously made it in the hood. He's still credible. He's a good guy, you know, and he's taking care of his responsibilities. So how can you knock that? You can't.
One of Jesse's oldest friends, Jeremiah, was there that night. Jesse knew he was becoming a thug, riding in stolen cars, assaulting people, carrying a gun. Turn away from that, Jesse said. Make a change. And a few months later, when Jeremiah was offered a chance to go to a boarding school out west, Jesse was asked to talk to him again, this time to close the deal.
I was just like, man, you're not missing nothing around here. You know, you got an opportunity. If you don't take it, you're an idiot. Yeah. And it's going to be hard, because it was hard when I first left. You know, you don't want to do it. Okay? You don't want to give up some of the things that you have. You just don't want to do it. You know, but that came at a pivotal time in Jeremiah's life, and I was just like, man, you're going, man. You need to go.
He told me them things, and that really stuck to me, because I saw that, I mean, if a young man like him went through all the stuff he went through and still making it, what about me? I mean, why can't I do it, you know? Now, why can't I, you know, try to follow in his footsteps, you know, do as he did or better, you know, do what I have to do.
After their talk, Jesse took Jeremiah shopping for the things he'd need at a boarding school, sheets and towels. They spent the night together at Jesse's house, playing video games and talking, like they'd been doing since they were boys. Jeremiah is about to mark 1 year at the boarding school. And here in the neighborhood, we are making lists of boys we want Jesse to talk to the next time he comes home.
Jesse Jean is graduating with honors.
When I think of my childhood, I see myself about 9 years old, and I'm watching the older guys play basketball in my neighborhood. I want to follow in their footsteps. In the Washington, D.C. public school system, I struggled through junior high school. I went to the local teen learning center for tutoring help, for fun, and to stay out of trouble. Things started to change when late one afternoon, on a cold fall day, I met two women, Tony and Terry. They saw something in me, this great potential that I did not see. Today, standing here, I have faith in myself. I have learned to value my personal standards of respect, honesty, and responsibility. I'm open to whatever is next for me in my life. I trust my inner core and my morals. This summer, I have a job as a day camp counselor in my old neighborhood. I will go back to the basketball court and play ball with the guys. Now, unlike that 9-year-old boy, I understand the rules of the game. I understand the future is up to me. I will make my own footsteps. Thank you very much.
Jesse Jean was accepted at Ohio Wesleyan University. And 4 years later, he had a degree in anthropology and sociology and a basketball plaque from his team's trip to the NCAA finals. After his graduation in 2008, I went to see him. Asked Jesse to see his college diploma, and he climbs up to the third floor of the house he now shares with his old tutor in Alexandria, Virginia. He keeps it in an antique trunk in his room.
This is what $40,000 a year looks like.
Jesse doesn't point out that he graduated with honors from Ohio Wesleyan University and that he had a double major. He is always understated when he's teasing or remembering when no one saw his potential.
As a youngster, I mean, I went to various different schoolings, and those I've, you know, been told that, you know, you'll never amount to anything, you know, you're not smart enough and all of that stuff. Me being the type of person I am, it kind of motivated me.
Jesse began to react against expectations, against what he saw in his chaotic home and neighborhood.
Anybody say that? Shut up, right?
Jesse grew up here on 17th Street in Washington, D.C. Drug dealers, some of them relatives, anchored the street corner, and a police camera pointed at Jesse's house where he lived with his grandmother. He was in the middle of what Jesse called a thug mentality.
I just knew whatever was going on around there was not for me.
This was Jesse's survival plan. Stay in his room and play video games, all night if he had to. When his grandmother and uncle started drinking, leave. Walk past the dealers, eyes down. Just get up the block, right here, to the door of the local teen center.
Because around here was where all of the possibilities and opportunities were.
just right around the corner from me. And my mindset was, well, if they're available right around here, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get from there to here.
Jesse visited his old neighborhood a lot this summer. On this day, he sits for a bit in front of the old teen center, and two friends saunter by, and then one of his older cousins.
I'm good. How are you?
The cousin pulls out a photo. Her son also graduated. Two black men with college diplomas.
My soul rejoices to know that, okay, y'all did what y'all had to do. Y'all keep doing what you have to do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It's not where you came from, it's where you're going.
Absolutely.
You know, where are you going?
Absolutely.
Jesse spent his college years thinking hard about where he came from and how he avoided what seemed like a predestined life of violence and crime. His mother and father died in a murder-suicide. Two favorite cousins went to jail. Others got high every day. Not Jesse.
It was described in me when I was born that I wasn't afraid to go against the grain. I wasn't afraid to not have people accept me fully. And at a very young age, I saw exactly how I didn't want to live and how I didn't want to turn out. So, and, you know, when I made those decisions to do something differently or not go with the grain, I mean, there was times where I was alienated, but at the same time, I expected that. But that didn't deter me from my goals.
Do you think that made you a loner?
Absolutely, to a certain extent. And I've had many years of being a loner, you know, and it was protection mechanism for me.
Jesse knew this in his gut. But still, when he reached Ohio Wesleyan University, he wanted to know why. That led him to choose anthropology and sociology as his major, the study of human behavior. Why, for instance, did Jesse's sister and brother drop out of school, but not Jesse? How was he able to accept the help from his tutors, Terry Ellison and Toni Husted, two white women from a very different world? Terry and Toni watched Jesse as he unraveled this.
It was just so beautiful to watch, you know, that curiosity of learning. And I think so much of what he ended up studying at college helped him.
We have had some incredible discussions of man and the difference between the inheritance and environment and a lot of those things. I mean, he has been able to put his own situation in a scientific context.
The more Jesse read, the more questions surfaced. What about his father, who in one terrible moment killed Jesse's mother and then himself? Is violent behavior passed down? That was how his grandmother and uncles treated Jesse, accusing him of being just like his father.
I mean, there's a lot of different theories on why that was the case. And the one that I feel like is most relevant to me in that situation was because, you know, they were understandably angry. And to a certain extent, I was scapegoated. I was the scapegoat. And so, which is understandable at the time, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating what happened or what took place, but it has allowed me to understand why.
And when it came time to write his college thesis, Jesse chose to study neighborhood teen centers. He argued for more funding and volunteers because they can and do change lives. Now his thesis is packed away with his diplomas and basketball awards.
I'm anxious about finding a job, and because, you know, everything gets real now. Everything has been real, but, you know, you got a lot of stuff you got to be responsible for, and I'm a little bit nervous.
Jesse has a new briefcase and the book Job Hunting for Dummies, gifts from his college girlfriend. She's a kindergarten teacher in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that's where Jesse is looking for a job. And when he gets his first paycheck, Jesse will pull out the budget spreadsheets that Toni, who he now calls Mom, made for him.
She did one for, if I was to make $40,000, then $35,000, and then $30,000. And then in them she has...
Ed, Toni's husband, comes in with the mail and shows Jesse the cover of the New Yorker magazine, a graduate heading out into the world with a rabbit's foot dangling from his cap, and they chuckle together. Yes, there was some luck. Jesse knows this was in the mix, along with the theories of human behavior. So little of his story has been predictable. What if he never walked up to the teen center and met the two women who have now become his family? Here is Terry, his other mother.
Well, and that's it. I mean, if you think about all the basic things you need as a child to develop to your potential, whatever that is, and how many of those things have been missing throughout his young life and really into his early teens, and who had to pull in, you know, who, how did he survive? I mean, that's what I always think to myself. Geez, I mean, you know, how did he make it to us? And good for him.
Terry says, you know, we have to figure this out, how Jesse got to us, so we can make a map for others.
Now you need me, call me, no matter where you are, no matter how far.
Terry, Tony, and their husbands gave Jesse an old Volvo for graduation, and he packed it up and moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, to be with his girlfriend. Jesse now works with teenagers as a mental health technician. I'm Katie Davis of Neighborhood Stories. This is HearingVoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.